Chapter 2. The Wedding at Cana, the First Passover, the Cleansing of the Temple. Verse 1. On the third day there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus also was invited to the wedding with his disciples. When the wine ran out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to the servants, "Fill the jars with water," and they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the master of the feast." So they took it. When the master of the feast tasted the water now became wine, and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first, and when the people have drunk freely, then the poor wine. But you have kept the good wine until now." This, the first of his signs, Jesus did in Cana in Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum with his mother and his brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there for a few days. So we're now in the second chapter of John, and we're being told about what happened in the village called Cana of Galilee. Jesus and his family were there. He also invited his disciples. The well-known story of the water that was turned into wine follows this introduction. The wedding occurred on Tuesday, or on the third day of the Israelite week. The irony here is that the third day of the Israelite week in the Torah carried certain importance. After all, in Genesis 1, the phrase, "God saw that it was good," is stated twice, verses 10 and 12. In other words, the wedding happening on the third day of the week evoked in the ancient Israelite mind the idea of God's blessing upon the event. But very quickly, we saw that the family who organized the marriage feast ran out of wine, one of the symbols of blessing in Israelite culture. This text is important since it begins a series of 7 miracles that Jesus performed. Every one of the miracles shows how the created order submitted itself to Jesus' authority. As a part of the whole gospel narrative, these 7 miracles testify to Jesus' authority to do what he does and to say what he says. We read in 2:6, "Now there were 6 stone water pots set there for the purification of the Iudaoi, containing 2 or 3 measures each." It is often argued that the best way to translate the Iudaoi is simply Judeans. It is also often argued that the Iudaoi were the Jerusalemite authorities. Both of these theories fall short in explaining references like this when the Iudaoi were permanently present outside of Judea. A geographical Judean location was not a necessary condition for people to be classified as Iudaoi, and John 2:6 is not the only example of this. Cana was in Galilee, and so were the Iudaoi. In another instance, opposition from the Iudaoi was seen in Galilee in Kfar Nahum, Capernaum. In this passage, John 6:24-59, we read that the crowd, together with the assembled leadership of the Kfar Nahum synagogue, asked Jesus to perform miracles as verification of his authority. Jesus characteristically challenged this authority structure, saying that his authority did not reside with the current Jerusalem leadership, but with his Father, John 6:24-59. In this case also, the Iudaoi in Kfar Nahum should be viewed as the adherents or religious affiliates of the Iudaoi proper, the Judean-centered ruling elite, and the system they administered. Verse 13. The Passover of the Iudaoi was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. On a number of occasions, the Gospel states that Jesus celebrated the feasts of the Iudaioi. Given that the first century non-Jewish converts mostly hailed from the so-called God-fearing circles that were somehow connected to the Jewish synagogues, almost no one in the original audience of this Gospel needed to be repeatedly told that Passover was a Jewish versus Roman holiday. Anyone with an interest in Christ-related claims already knew that Passover had something to do with the people of Israel. After all, the general Jewish presence was numerous and well spread throughout the empire, consisting of anywhere between 5 to 10% of total population. The designation Jewish Passover, as many Bibles translate it, or more literally, the Passover of the Jews, is stated each time this feast is mentioned. But strikingly, the winter feast of dedication, Hanukkah, never had the word Jewish attached to it, John 10:22. This was because the Samaritan Israelites did not celebrate this holiday, and hence there was no need to specify whose calendar it followed. Keep in mind that the Samaritans rejected the legitimacy of the Jerusalem temple and would have had no reason to celebrate its cleansing and rededication as the Judean Israelites and their affiliates did. This point argues that Samaritan Israelites were very much at the center of the Gospel of John's audience and not simply part of it like everyone else. Apart from Samaritan and Jewish Passovers, other Passovers were celebrated according to different Israelite calendars. Because of this, it was important to specify which Passover Jesus observed. Jesus was not a Samaritan, nor did he observe the Passover according to the calendar of Qumranites from the Judean desert. His holiday celebrations, his birth in and his burial according to the customs of the Iudaioi all harken back to John 1:11b. His own did not receive him. Where Jesus' national, cultural, and religious identity as Iudaios was already firmly established. Verse 14. In the temple he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons, and the money changers were sitting there. And making a whip of cords, he drove them out of the temple with the sheep and oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told those who sold the pigeons, "Take these things away. Do not make my father's house a house of trade." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." Here we see Jesus perform the highly symbolic act of temple cleansing by dispersing those who turned the house of God into profane but profitable industry. It was Jesus' passion and commitment to purify Israel's religion that moved him to take this action. Jesus' concern here seems to be very different from his motivation as described in the Synoptic Gospels, which may point to this Gospel's higher concern for issues of purity. It is striking that the Synoptic Gospels use a different quotation from Old Testament to describe the reason for the cleansing of the temple. While Mark quotes Jesus as saying, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all the nations,' but you have made it a robber's den," Mark 11:17. John, on the other hand, explains Jesus' action in a very different way. We read in John 2:17, "Zeal for your house will consume me." For Mark and the rest of the Synoptic Gospels, the issue seems to be the loss of Israel's meaningful engagement with Gentiles. The emphasis on the purity of the temple versus the loss of the light of the nation's outlook in the Synoptic accounts argues that the audience shared these concerns and presumably would have resonated with this message. For John's Gospel, the issue is the appropriateness and purity of the place used for the worship of Israel's God. He hereby declares the temple in Jerusalem unfit for divine worship. The apostate stewards of the temple were to blame. In this way, just like the Qumranites, Jesus believed that the temple needed to be cleansed of impurity. Verse 18. So the Iudaioi said to him, "What sign do you show us for doing these things?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The Iudaioi then said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking about the temple of his body. When thereby he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scriptures and the word that Jesus had spoken. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs he was doing. But Jesus on his part did not entrust himself to them, because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about him, for he himself knew what was in a man. The authority that Jesus displayed in the prophetic action of cleansing the temple was once again highlighting the basic question that was implicitly asked: who is and who should be in charge of God's people Israel? The Gospel's answer, predictably, King Jesus. The text above, verses 23 to 25, must not be separated from the preceding verses 13 to 22. Which describe the same thing, Jerusalem during the Passover. We must see verse 23 continuing what was begun in Jerusalem some verses earlier. In Greek, Jesus on his part did not entrust himself to them, because he knew all people could and should, because of the overall context, be translated, Jesus on his part did not believe in them, because he knew them all. With this slight translation adjustment, what comes before and what follows in the Gospel account fits much better, especially with the follow-up verse 25, "needed no one to bear witness." This kind of formula, "show, tell us, what sign do you show us for doing these things," will be raised again by the Iudaioi on several occasions. On each occasion, the point was that they were formally in charge of religious life in ancient Israel under Roman occupation. Jesus' response could not have been more explicit than what he says in 2:19. "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." The authorities could not have been more devalued. This was the case whether or not they understood it as they did, verse 20, or as they should have, verse 21. Without bothering to explain what he really meant, Jesus denied the authority of the Iudaioi altogether. One of the clearest examples of this "show us, I refuse" dynamic is found in John chapter 10. The Iudaioi challenged Jesus to submit his candidacy for messiahship to them, the Jerusalemite leadership. Jesus refused, saying that his father and his own deeds were enough to prove his authority, thus rejecting theirs. The Iudaioi gathered around him, saying, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the anointed one, tell us plainly." Jesus answered, "I did tell you, but you do not believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me, but you do not believe because you are not my sheep." This text in John 10:24-27 is most often read as an instance of Jesus' general lack of clarity in declaring his messiahship. However, I think it is unwarranted. The question of the Iudaioi should not be read, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the anointed one, tell us plainly." But rather, "How long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the anointed, tell us plainly." From the standpoint of the Iudaioi, their authority to validate Jesus' candidacy for messiahship was not being honored. Jesus drew large crowds who followed him. The blind saw, the lame walked, lepers were cured, the deaf heard, and the dead came back to life. Jesus' identity as Messiah was self-evident, but he had failed to declare himself as such to the Jerusalem authorities. This was the reasoning behind their demand: "How long will you keep us in suspense?" Jesus, however, consistently stated that his miracles and therefore his father's witness of his messiahship were enough to establish him as God's messianic servant. He refused to acknowledge the Jerusalem ruler's authority over him and by extension over the whole of Israel. Jesus was the one to whom Israel's covenantal God had entrusted such authority, and therefore submitting himself to the illegitimate or at least lower level of authority of the Iudaioi was out of the question. We see that the Iudaioi assumed that they had the right to approve or disapprove of Jesus and were already engaged in the process of judging him. They challenged him at that time and more explicitly later to prove who he was. Jesus refused.